fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
That's either me clearing my throat or falling down. I'm just feeling peachy, ready to run face first into Dandy at any moment. I can tell you, what a week, what a weekend coming up. Fishing Frank here, got Robert in the chair across me, and RJ running the important stuff. So we're here to do fishing stuff, and we're going to get to some of the fishing. But to be quite honest, you know, I had a weird week, Robert.
You think?
I really did. Now, a few years ago, one of the doctors who comes in the store all the time diagnosed me with a hereditary motor tremor disorder. If anybody ever sees me, they know my hands shake a lot. Well, he decided, you know, he said, well, I can prescribe you these pills. And he said, they're a little expensive, but, you know, they'll work and they'll help your hands not shake. I said, well, what do they do? He says, well, they simulate alcohol in your blood, and your hands will not shake so much. I said, well, why can't I just do alcohol? He says, well, a little tiny bit would be all right. So set me on a quest for moonshine, because little tiniest sip of moonshine, the hands level right out. You know, you don't get drunk or anything, but just enough to calm your hands down. So I became kind of a, as you know, a connoisseur of moonshine from all over the country.
Very much so.
And so, yeah, you don't know this, but if you come into the store and my hands start shaking so bad I can't tie a knot or something, makes other people nuts, I can slip into my office, have a little half sip of moonshine, and my hands go right back to normal. And I don't, you know, but I don't have to pay for all the pills and, you know, all the rest of that stuff. And I like being on prescription stuff. So I have this really good customer, and he makes moonshine up in Ohio. Well, he brought me a whole gallon of this stuff, and it was made out of honey that his best friend's mother raised bees up there, and they made this out of honey. And a whole gallon, this big, heavy wine bottle.
Yeah, like a heavy-duty wine bottle.
And I said, well, I got to remember to take this home, so got there in the morning. I set it on the front seat of the truck, nice soft cushioned place where it couldn't get broke, and went out there that afternoon. And I go to get my truck. I was looking for one of my drill sets and open the door, and I crawled in. I'm looking around, and all of a sudden I can't breathe. I'm getting dizzy. I'm like, what the heck is this? I fall back out of the truck. I'm standing there next to it trying to get my breath back. I'm dizzy as I could be, and going, oh my God, what the heck is this? And I look on the front seat, and the bottle had exploded. The entire gallon exploded on the front seat of the truck. So, I mean, I've had Kevin Sweet, who does cleaning. He's got like one of those steamer services.
Upholstery, carpet cleaning.
Yeah, he does upholstery and carpet, all that. Well, Kevin, I get him because everything's covered in glass, and there's literally a gallon of moonshine soaked into the front seat of my truck. It's down, the floor's wet, the seat's soaked. And how am I going to explain that to a cop? You know what I mean? Where do you go from there?
You've been drinking, sir?
No, but I'm that night.
No, but I'm high.
You know, yeah. I had all the windows down. I'm still about half buzzed by the time I got home. I was like, oh, my God. And I can't believe it. This is how my week started out, before the tent sale. I mean, you can still smell it in the truck. It's been, what, 5 days now?
5 days.
And
been cleaned.
Kevin Sweet cleaned it and cleaned it and cleaned it. If you ever need somebody to clean your stuff, Kevin's amazing. What a guy. But even he could get the smell out. He put some deodorizer stuff on it.
It's a deodorizer with a bacteria in it that helps actually eat the stuff away.
Yeah, so he did all that. But now it smells like cinnamon moonshine in my truck. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh.
But wait, the question would be, did you ever get to taste this stuff?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it was wonderful.
Oh man.
I mean, it was so, you put it in your mouth, you'd swallow it, you really don't taste much, and then all of a sudden your eyes start to water. I mean, it was perfect. I was so sad. I was almost in tears. This was, and he's, he got old. He had to have back surgery. He's just one of the nicest guys. But he had this old cabin out in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania. And he lived in Ohio, but he had this cabin out in the middle of the woods in Pennsylvania. And he would make it there at his cabin. Oh, it was so sad. I felt like my best friend died that day. When I look around, I got all this stuff in my truck, the glass. And so anyway, I started to recover from that. We've got the tent sale going on this weekend. A couple of late editions. Now, WKDW obviously is going to be broadcasting and doing interviews right from the tent sale, which is going to be awesome. RJ, our producer, is going to be there. You can come down and meet him. It's right at the bait shop. The entrance is in to get in and out is on the backside of the store on Edgewater. And we've also got Barracuda Cast Nets coming. We just confirmed that. Tease Tackle is going to have all those pompano jigs and everything there. Patrick Sabile, I talked to him the other day. He was in China, and he sold Sabile lures to Pure Fishing. Now he's coming back with a new line of lures, another brand of Patrick's. It's called a Band of Anglers. And now I don't think Patrick is going to have any lures to sell, but he's going to have prototypes. He's going to have a casting tank. And if you ever wanted to just sit down and have a conversation with the craziest, wildest, most wonderful French guy you've ever met in your life, you come down and spend some time with Patrick Sabile. And most of the time, you can even understand what he says.
Yeah.
Most of the time. But Patrick is awesome. You're going to get to meet him.
Well, and you can hear some of his fishing stories, because he's fished all over the world, but what a lot of people don't know is he actually guided or captained the boat to take the guy out that caught the world record tarpon.
Yeah, the biggest tarpon ever caught was, the guy who caught it was actually, Patrick was on the boat showing him where to go and what to do and how to do it. He was hired by that guy. So ask Patrick about his, you know, world record tarpon trip. That was in Africa, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sierra Leone area.
Yeah, he was guiding out of Africa at the time, and he's awesome. And I would say another one you really got to meet is Mark Nichols.
He's by far one of the nicest, genuinest people I have ever met.
Yeah, I mean, he's just amazing. Have you ever met Mark Nichols, RJ?
No, I haven't.
Wait till you get to talk to this guy.
I'm looking forward to Saturday.
It's amazing. At the last ICAST show, you know, I'm not what you would call a snappy dresser.
No, we would never call you snappy.
No.
Trendsetting.
Trendsetting, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if you're starting to trend from the 70s.
It's going to come back one of these days.
That's right, yeah. Somebody once told me
I was at Rising Sun shirts with the sleeves off.
Yeah, somebody once told me in a bar, they said, if you said it again, I'm going to knock you out. When you wake up, your clothes will be back in style again.
Well, that's probably about where I'm at. But I think the only one who looks worse than me at these big events is Mark Nichols, because Mark hates wearing shoes. So I got my old jeans, my, you know, sleeveless T-shirt on, and I'm standing there talking to a guy. And all of a sudden, I hear this guy chuckling behind me, because this guy's like, you know, blowing me off, because obviously I can't have a good store or anything like that with the way I look, homeless, you know. And I turn around and look back behind me, and it's Mark standing there. He's got no shoes on. His jeans are worse than mine. And he starts laughing. He goes, man, that guy has no idea what he's doing, does he? And I was like, no. You know, it was just fun. But you got to meet Mark. 3 years ago at the tent sale, we got washed out. I mean, it was just, we must have had 4 inches of rain in, what, an hour?
Something
and
pretty ridiculous.
40, 50 mile an hour winds and lightning and everything's going on. And I get out there and I'm checking on him because I see Mark still standing outside. Well, he's trying to hold his tent down to keep it from blowing away. He's got a garbage bag over him with a slit cut in it for his head. His hat on. He's holding the thing down. I said, you okay, Mark? He says, man, this is the best show you ever did, Frank. And all of a sudden, I start hearing yelling from the other side of the parking lot. They're standing almost knee-deep in water, and I look, and Patrick Sabeel, his tent, he had all his Sabeel stuff in it, had literally collapsed under the weight of the water. And the whole tent's down, all the products everywhere. And he's standing there with a fishing pole. He was demoing lures. He's casting across the parking lot, cussing me out because the fishing in the parking lot stinks. He hasn't caught anything since he, in the middle of a thunderstorm. So we've had some pretty unusual times there.
We're looking at good weather this weekend, though, right? It's supposed to be clear and cold, yeah.
Clear and cold, which is nice because, you know, it's always warm in the sun. And this is going to make a really good show.
I don't even know if it's going to be cold. I think it's supposed to get up to like 80 that day.
Yeah, but it's going to start out really chilly in the morning. It's kind of nice to, and then, you know, as you warm up during the day. So that'll be good.
It's still going to be a beautiful day no matter what.
We're trying to find a place for Barracuda to do Castnet demos, Castnet Company. We got all kinds of stuff going on. I would have to say the best, what's the number one fish you could think of if you're going to go out catching right now, not so much fishing, but actually catching, what would you call number one, Robert?
Well, then I have to reevaluate things. You know, realistic in the next couple of days as it warms up in these afternoons, I'm going to go snook fishing.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going in the morning for them. I'm going to fish that late afternoon feed, you know, have that whole day to warm up. And then go target them. You know, some of your bigger legal fish have been in the canals, but I've been hearing a lot of scattered reports on the east wall, the west wall, and all along the intercoastal because it got so warm all through February. Those fish kind of got in that spring pattern and were moving out of the canals.
Yeah, they were actually going out thinking they should go out to spawn.
Yeah.
And then they had to go, oh, no, let's go back to the canals. It's cold out here.
Yeah, so it's... There's fish kind of scattered everywhere, but they have been cooperating fairly well up until a couple days ago with this cold, but not a lot of guys have been fishing in the afternoon, and I think that's a little bit better because last night I actually heard a couple small snook pop behind the house. Tells me that it warmed up enough during the day to kind of get them a little bit excited.
Well, one of the big things is people always think, okay, this is March, so I'm going to go fishing for this or this. And, you know, I've never seen a school of fish that has an iPhone with them or a calendar or,
they're the smart ones. They don't want to listen to the weatherman.
Right. If it gets warm, they go to this spot. When it cools off, they go to that spot. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like, you know, our snowbird friends.
Yeah.
Because right now, Florida is unbelievably busy, unbelievably packed. The hotels are just going crazy. And, you know, I wish I was in something like the hotel business. Because I know rooms that were going for 80 bucks a night that they're getting 300 a night for right now. 200, 300 bucks. That, to me, there ought to be laws against gouging. But, they call it...
Supply and demand, yeah.
Yeah, supply and demand, which gouging comes to my mind. I don't raise my prices in the summer or lower them in the summer and raise them in the winter. Could you imagine having to go around and change all the prices?
No.
I actually had some guy come in the store and said, well, you know, you just raise all your prices for that day and then, you know, because like when we do the tent sale, oh, you just raise your prices up and then give a lower one on that. I said, you're right. We go around, we've got 10,000-12,000 items in the store, 3 to 6 deep. We erase all the packages that we wrote on, take the magic marker off, and rewrite higher prices on all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Moron. I mean, I don't... Yeah. You know, it would be different, but we take a magic marker and write the price on. So.
Right.
All right. So anyway, people get all kinds of weird ideas. But hotels, the hotels are solid. All because we had 4 nor'easters.
Back to back to back.
Back to back to back. And they're talking about another storm this week. So it's still miserable up there. It's hard to believe when we're sitting here and it's 80 degrees and wonderful. And it's just gorgeous. And now we're talking about it got cold.
It is cold. It's relative to where you live.
I don't have any relatives anywhere. Everybody I know is here. So,
well,
why would my relatives, why are you bringing up my relatives?
I don't know. It's not really relevant.
Okay. Anyway, we've got all of these snook lots and lots of moving back into the canal because of the cold weather. I'm going to call trolling with a storm twitch stick probably your best bet.
I'd say that would be a really good one. That would be my second choice, personally.
Now, if I was going to go, oh, and right now shrimp are going to be almost impossible to get, boys and girls. Live shrimp is going to be very, very hard to find. Why is live shrimp so hard to find? Well,
40 mile an hour gusts?
Yeah, let's take a look at it. Did you want to take your boat out and go out pleasure cruising, much less having to drag a net and work on a boat? Shrimpers ain't too bright. I mean, you know that because they're shrimpers. But they're out there, and even they don't want to die to go out and get...
No, they don't like having movies made after them.
Yeah, no more movies made after shrimpers. All right, so it's just too rough, too windy. Live shrimp's going to be at a premium for a while. As soon as the wind dies down, everything will be back to normal. Going out a lot of cobia around right now. Yeah. Cobias, I mean, going everywhere.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of different customers. I mean, one of our captains just destroyed them the other day. He spent all day on his trolling motor or his outboard and just idled the flats in 2 to 5 feet of water on both the east wall and west wall. And at the end of the day, they had 12. And all good-sized fish, he said.
Yeah, I mean...
And then I have had other customers have been out there looking for pompano and looking for trout, just either idling along or drifting and coming across, you know, one here, two there. The water is super clear over on the east side and the west side. Maybe not so much today with the wind the way it's been, but prior to that, it's pretty clear water. This is that time of year when sight fishing for those fish, if you dedicate the day to it and just go out there and idle down the west wall in 3 to 5 feet of water, keep the sun to your back so you have good visibility, watch those flats, and you should be able to see them. Look for maybe a couple of manatees. Sometimes they're following them. Look for a regular single stingray and check him out because they'll follow those. But a lot of these fish are just swimming by themselves. So, cast them.
One of the things about it is trying to catch a cobia. You're drifting along and you see this fish. Now, there's a few things you can do to get that cobia up closer to the boat. Some people just use a straight gold spoon. Johnson Sprite seems to be one of the best ones for it, or the Johnson Minnow, because they're wider, they're not a very narrow spoon, and the width on it really comes into play because you can reel it slower, get it fluttering, not rolling over, but just kind of going back and forth, the back of the spoon going. But it's that width that allows you to slow down. It doesn't sink as fast. As you start to reel it, it actually wants to come up in the water. And getting it so it's just below the surface, flashing in the sun, is a really good way to get that cobia interested in it. But if you've got like a gator spoon or a Castmaster, it falls too fast. It won't stay up in the water going slow. It wants to drop. So those narrow spoons, while they're good for the mackerel and other stuff, really not that good for the cobia. I've actually taken the split ring or the hook off the back of a Johnson Sprite and put it on the top end so the wide part was first, and I could reel it real slow that way. Now, it's a little tricky to do, and it's better to leave it just the way it is, but you got to reel it slow enough so it just wobbles. Now, outside of a gold spoon, I would say the one lure that cobia get most interested in but won't hit is a spinnerbait, a bass spinnerbait. Okay. Willow blades on a bass spinnerbait, you throw it out and you reel it in just below the surface, going real slow, nice slow roll with it, and the cobia will follow it up. If you got two guys in the boat, take an old rod that you're not going to use. Put a spinnerbait on it. Doesn't need a lead or anything. Just tie the line right to the spinnerbait. And when you see the cobia, cast as close as far, you know, or past it as you can get. And then just start slow reeling it. And that cobia will follow it up to the boat. Now, he's not going to eat it. So the other guy there has got to do something. Now, outside of a gold spoon, one I want to try and I haven't is Mark Nichols' snake lure.
I think that would work really, really, really good.
These things, they kind of about the length, 12 plus inches. It looks like a garter snake. but I think it would be a great eel presentation, just with like a 3/8 ounce jig head or something like that, and just put a jig head on it, or maybe a weighted worm hook. I don't know. What do you think?
I think either one of those would be good. I mean, I think I'd be more prone to go with just a offset worm hook rather than anything with weight to it, because that thing's got a little bit of weight to it to be able to cast, and that way I can work it up and down in the water column depending on where that fish is at.
So I think the scenario would be one guy throws the spinnerbait out to him and gets him following that spinnerbait and gets him within casting distance of the worm hook with this DOA
snake,
and then throw the snake across and try figuring that he'll probably eat the snake where he wouldn't eat the spinnerbait, but the spinnerbait could get him close enough you could just cast that with a worm hook.
Yeah, that would work real well.
All right, now, one of the things about cobia, let's say you're not a lure person and you just want to go out with bait. Now, you can do it with shrimp, you can do it with white bait, thread fins, live bait, period. But the hard part about it is, if you cast the bait at them, sometimes that'll spook them off.
Yeah.
So what I tend to do is I'll take a shrimp, I'll go into live oak, grab a shrimp, and just toss it to them. And wait a second, watch what happens with that, and then take another one, either a white bait or a shrimp, just one at a time. And I'll pitch my bait at them just out of my fingers, just no hooks, no nothing, just giving them a freebie.
Right.
And once they eat one, then you do another one, another freebie. And then on the third or fourth one, you've got a hook in it and your line. But you cannot cast it at the cobia because now you got the rod up in the air. You got all this extra motion going on. You're going to freak them out. And it didn't go the same way as the other ones. So you just get some line out the end of the rod and toss it the same way as you did the ones without the hook. If you try and cast that one with the hook in, all of a sudden everything's weird and everything's different. It's not going to work. I just toss it out. Just the same as I did the freebies.
That, just hand feeding it to them.
Exactly. But this one has a hook and a leash.
Right.
And we're going to take this cobia for a swim. But if you cast it at them, now, you can do that when they're away from the boat, cast a bait at them. But once you start hand-feeding them with a couple of freebies to get them into the thing, oh, hey, this is good. Yeah, I like that. All right. Oh, look, another one. Gulp. Okay, yeah, that's great. And then throwing the other one at them with the rod, whoa, what was that? Off I go.
Right.
But if you just do it the same way each time, you got a much better shot of hitting them. Now, is there anything else that you... What would you like to throw at them besides that? Jerk baits, hard baits, soft baits?
A combination of both.
Okay, explain.
I would probably throw I like to have a 3/4 ounce or maybe a 1 ounce Spro bucktail rigged up on one of my poles with a black or purple curl tail worm, like a culprit worm, attached to the bucktail as a teaser. And that's just one of my go-to favorite all-around cobia lures.
You've got a jig, and it's got the lead head on it, and it has the bucktail coming off the back by the hook.
Mm-hmm.
You take your worm, put it right through the end of the worm, right at the front of it,
right.
Go onto the hook, and then bring the hook out so the worm trails off the back.
Yeah, there's only a book, because those Spro jigs have a fairly long shanked hook on them. I'm only going maybe about an inch into that worm.
I would say you need to go in at least an inch or it's not going to stay on.
Right.
If you go in a 1/4 inch and just try and hook it a little bit, it's going to rip right off if the fish touches it.
Right.
If you go in a good inch, I think it's going to stay on. Now, here's something. What about DOA snake on that off the back of it?
I think it would probably work the same.
You think it would work as well?
Because
usually I use ribbon tail worms.
Right.
And whether it's a gambler or a culprit or whatever, just a ribbon tail worm.
Right. I think that would work amazing, especially if you get some of those fish that are maybe down a little bit deeper, because the tail on that snake, as you work it and you pause it, it wants to curl back up on itself almost like a spring.
Well, they come in the package curled, and they got a little tab, and you tear the tabs off. Mm-hmm. Now, I've tried it bass fishing, and I left the end of it curled up, right. And it worked pretty good. I caught a couple fish with it. But when you're reeling it and swimming it, when I was doing that, I was just tossing out, let it going to the bottom, and then just bouncing it on the bottom. And I actually left the last bit of it curled up, coiled, with the plastic on it. And it was pretty good. It gave it a different, thing. But swimming it doesn't work. You got to take all the tabs off and get it extended. But it will curl back up when you pause.
Yeah.
To some degree.
To some degree. It's surprising. So having that extra little bit of action, I think, might be pretty enticing for one.
So anyway, you can meet Mark Nichols. We talk about that at the tent sale. But one of the other guys who's just a giant in the industry is Eric Botnick. Now, Eric is the owner of MiraLure. I mean, his family have had MiraLure for a long time. He's second generation, I think, in MiraLure.
Yeah.
And
He's third generation. Because I think it was his grandfather that started the business.
Right, his grandfather, his father, and now Eric.
And they're all local, too. I mean, Pine Island is where they originally started.
Yep, L&S. L&S or L&M. I don't remember. Yep. But anyway, MiraLure has been around for a long time. One of the things we're going to do this year is expand on some of their older models. Eric's bringing down some brand new MiraLure stuff that nobody's ever seen before to the tent sale. They're MR-17s and new patterns. And I forget what he said about it, but he's got a great deal going on. He's got a bunch of new colors in Little Johns.
A couple of the colors are pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're really impressive. I mean,
you think that broken glass is an impressive one? Wait till you see this one. It's pretty stunning.
There's a 4x8-foot wall of MiraLure in the thing, and next to that, there's going to be a 2x4-foot board with all the brand new stuff that nobody's ever seen before there with Eric. And you can go in. He's going to have a casting tank. He's going to be doing Little Johns and the brand new lures in that tank, and there's only a limited amount of them, so you can go and meet him. But even if you don't want to buy something, at least go shake his hand. Get a selfie with him, for gosh sake. I mean, Mark Nichols, Eric Botnick, I mean, these are walk-around living legends in the industry. Now,
They're pioneers of the artificial lure fishing in Florida, without a doubt. I mean, they've changed a whole lot of ways people look at fishing for snook, redfish, and trout in the entire state. So it's not even just a small little area.
Yeah, I mean, and they're sold all over the country. I mean, these people are literally around the world, as a matter of fact. One thing I've never understood why it works is the MiraLure Little John. I've used them on cobia. I've caught flounder with them, redfish with them, snook with them, trout with them. I mean, all these different things you catch with them, and there's simply no reason for it.
No, not at all.
It looks like something pinched it out. It's big on one end and tapers all the way down to a little point in the other end. And I like the, I use a short shank jig head. So, but when it hits the bottom, I think that tail just kind of goes back and forth a little bit as it's sitting there. Because I get so many hits while it's just sitting on the bottom.
Yeah.
And now I'm pretty impatient and, frank. All right. So I don't let it sit long. But for that few seconds it's sitting there, I think it's just that little side to side. It's like, coming, I understand a lot of them. I don't know why that thing catches fish the way it does.
Neither do I.
Now,
it doesn't make any sense.
I've used the Little Johns on cobia to fairly good effect, but mostly if they sound down. If I'm seeing them up by the surface where I can actually see the cobia, and then they start heading towards the bottom, I've tossed the Little John on, made a big long cast, and then worked it back up and down, and I'm only moving the rod tip about 18 inches doing that, getting it to kind of swim in about an 18 inch up and down pattern, maybe 12 inch. I'm not doing the big 3-4 foot ups and downs. It's just getting it to swim along fairly close to the bottom with about 12 to 18 inches of coming up and going down in that kind of wave pattern. And it's been very effective on the cobia. But when they're down, when they're up by the top, I haven't done that well with them.
Yeah, I honestly have never tried throwing it at cobia, so I don't know how good it is, and I've never hooked one by accident on it either.
Well, but
still pretty fun.
All right. With the water temp dropping back down, the king mackerel have come back down into this area.
Yeah.
And with king mackerel coming back down, we're getting a lot of Spanish going to start moving in right after we get a little bit more weather as it gets a little bit warmer. We've got some mackerel, but they're more bigger ones.
Yeah.
Now,
not great numbers, but a little bit better quality.
So if you were out in the Gulf, how far out would you be looking for king mackerel right now?
I would probably start definitely looking closer to the passes, but realistically, probably about 3 to 15 miles out is where I'm going to stay most concentrated looking for them.
I'm hoping next week the wind backs off enough where it's going to be a little easier fishing for them.
Yeah.
A lot of guys trolling for them out there, the big king spoons, drone spoons, storm twitch stick, the Ozuri mid-size crystal minnow is doing good. The bomber, the big 30 is a great one to have down there. I don't think you're going to catch a king with it. You might hook some kind of big group or something with it. But it is a great teaser bait. I really do, when I get those 25s and 30s out, I'm using it to get attention to my other baits.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a larger profile to get things motivated and moving.
And a lot of sound, because you got to compete with the outboard. You know, and you got all the bubble trail off the outboard, and to get fish interested in what's going on, that big stretch 30 down there, or the bomber 30, or Rapala 30, whatever it is, boom, 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 just going back and forth, digging, 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 it seems to bring attention to my baits better. I used to use a lot of topwater teasers that slapped across the surface, but I found the bigger diving lures actually brought more luck to me while I'm trolling. Now, Spanish mackerel, switching over to them, we've got a few in the harbor, quite a bit in the Gulf. What's your favorite lure for Spanish mackerel?
All around, if I had just one lure to pick for them, it would be the Gotcha.
All right, I'll go with the Gotcha. I'm good on the redhead, silver body, twin hooks. I like those.
Yeah, I do the twin hooks, but I'm really not partial on a color.
You don't care about the color?
Nah. As long as it's got silver in it.
All right.
They work so well, and they cast a mile.
Yeah, they cast great. They work great. And it's probably the one I get broke off of the least.
Yeah.
Speaking of broke off of the least, we get broke off very seldom on WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM, here in Northport, Florida, broadcasting to the world at large. From Northport, Florida, because of the internet. You can also get it at kdwradio.com. And for those of you listening in Murdoch, Port Charlotte, pretty much Harbor Heights,
Englewood,
Venice, we're everywhere to everybody. And people listening around the world on the internet, howdy, boys and girls. I just got to remember, women fish a lot. I mean, just last night.
We've got a huge female clientele that just love to fish.
Yeah, we just had a woman in last night, and she dragged her husband in because he's okay in the fishing, but she's into it. Getting back to into it, the weird lure of the year.
Speaking of women. She fishes a lot.
Oh, yeah. Mary Miner.
Yeah.
Doug and Mary from Strike King are going to be at the tent sale. You have to go shake their hands. They're awesome people. And they get the Weird Lure of the Year award. This lure is great on larger Spanish mackerel, possibly kings, we don't know yet. But big trout, it's catching bonnet sharks, it's catching
redfish and
redfish. I don't know about snook.
I've had a couple of customers that have caught little snook on them.
Really?
Yeah, because of your suggestion going out and fishing for redfish with them, they've caught a couple of snook as bycatch on them.
All right. It is the Rage Craw from Strike King. It's a crawdad lure, but it acts like a curl tail, like a twin tail. Mm-hmm. And the only thing we can think of is it's got a little flat edge on the claws, C-L-A-W-S, claws, that add an extra sound or action or something No idea, but this thing's starting to become a saltwater phenomenon. I don't know of another lure that bonnet sharks attack the way they do this.
Right. Yeah, I don't know either.
And now, admittedly, Peg Leg was putting a little bit of shrimp scent on it. And he was using a little tiny bit of the Procure shrimp.
Right.
And just on the jig head. And it already has the coffee scent built into it. But the bonnets were banging. I mean, who thinks of a lure and shark, really?
Nobody.
The only other one I've ever caught bonnets on was a floating rattle trap. And it was only a couple, and I don't really know if they... I think I might have just upset them with it, and they hit it. But this thing, they're actually hunting down and attacking. And the Spanish mackerel, the trout, bigger fish than average. I mean, we're seeing, with the crawdad, at 2 inches plus average larger fish.
That's pretty significant when you're talking trout with the way they've been this year.
Yeah, I mean, instead of looking around 15 inches, 14 or whatever, you're looking at 16, 18, 20-inch fish. Yeah. I mean, literally bigger fish on the average, bigger mackerel, bigger trout. It's really weird. And all off a crawdad. I mean, this is a bass lure. But it does make kind of sense because when you put a jig head on it, the last half, I'm using that DOA quarter ounce with it, and the last half is kind of floppy. And when a blue crab, when a redfish comes up to eat it, they put their claws up like, yeah, I'm going to get you before you eat me. And it doesn't work. He still gets eaten. That's the same thing these do. But I really think it's all about the sound of those claws going back and forth in the water. I think that's...
a little bit different vibration and, you know, that total movement going on. I mean, you think you got the best of both worlds because the vibration's creating a different type of sound to it, but then you got both moving probably at different motions. You know, one might be going up and down. You know, it's hard to say, but
I don't really know. But they will be in the casting.
I have to explain it as long as it works.
Yeah, they'll be in the Strike King booth. They'll be demoing the crawdads. You can actually see it being worked there in the tank. But one thing I want to get to, I want to give a shout out to Mustad. Mustad made a comeback. Everybody makes mistakes, right? I mean, RJ, you know how many times I screw up. And, you know, it might be time to forgive and forget with Mustad. Mustad started out in Norway. And then somebody had the bright idea, let's go to China with these hooks. And we took out, what, about half our Mustad selection when they did that? Because the hooks were thin, they broke, they bent, they didn't hold up. They just weren't Mustad.
Right.
And now they're back in Norway.
They're being made back in Norway again?
Yes, they are. I went, looked at it, and I saw the flag thing on there. I'm like, what is that doing on a Mustad hook? That's fake. And nope, made back in Norway. I still have the packages that say made in China. These are white packages. The blue packs were made in China. The white packs are made back in Norway. Mustad went back. They are going to be at the tent sale. They'll be out front along the 41 side. They won't be behind the store. They'll be out front. But go in and go, nice job, Mustad. You know, we forgive you. You screwed up. But now you're back. And the original machines, original hooks, we're so happy that Mustad is back.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I can finally forgive them for all the saltwater bucktails that I tied, spent hours on putting them together, only to have a fish rip the end of the hook off. So I guess I can forgive them now that they're back in Norway.
Yeah, because that was horrible.
No, it was. Just about every hook had some major flaw to it. They would snap off at the eye. They would snap off at the barb end. You know, it's just... And there was no rhyme or reason to it. You know?
Isn't it amazing?
It was just crappy metal. You know?
And that's the same problem I had. I had a line of rods, Fish and Frank's rods. I contracted a company in China to make them. Paid for stainless steel guides, and they sent some kind of chrome alloy garbage on probably at least half of them. And they called me up, don't you want to order more rods? I said, not until you give me a refund for all the money I spent on the stainless when you sent me the garbage guides on them, you know? Well, we didn't. I said, liar. Actually, the guy don't want to talk to me anymore. So, but Mustad's made back in Norway. Eagle Claw's American made. VMC's made in France. Owner's made in Japan. So, watch out for off-brand hooks that are made in China because they don't hold up. It's all recycled metal, cheap garbage, and it's just bad. So, anyway, you know, glad to see Mustad was back. I was really excited to see that. So, anyway, speaking of somebody new and baits that are going to work, and they've been working great on snook, back up in the canals and out on the flats. I don't know if they're going to work on Spanish mackerel. I would assume they would. And that's the Z-Man. Z-Man's coming for the first time to the tent sale this year.
They're a pretty strong bait, but I don't think they'll hold up to a Spanish.
I don't know. This is going to be interesting to find out if they'd actually hold up. You'd almost think so because Steve, when he was catching the Spanish on the crawdad, was getting three or four Spanish per crawdad.
That's pretty impressive.
That was pretty impressive. So the Z-Man, I think, is a little tougher bait, right. So it might hold up. I mean, but you never know because Spanish, they got all those teeth. They're pointy, they're sharp, and like a gotcha. Why does a gotcha get broken off less than any other lure? I don't know what it is, but why is that? But you never know. Sure. But Z-Man's making some pretty cool stuff. They come preset with the Pro-Cure in the bag.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in, the Pro-Cure is infused into the plastic. And anyone who hasn't used Z-Man and is used to using other soft plastics, one of the unique features about them, which is a pro and a con for me, is they're made out of a type of elastic plastic. Literally, you can take a 4-inch paddle tail and stretch it up to probably about 14, 15 inches without even thinking about breaking.
Oh, yeah, from 4 inches to 10, 14 is probably no problem.
Yeah, and they don't break as easily. And also the puffer fish have a harder time taking the tails off. But they make all sorts from, I mean, all sorts of different types of soft plastics. They've got a big one that's kind of eel-like that people like to use for tarpon fishing in the summertime. And then they've got all the way down to really small that you can use on your snook, redfish, or trout in a little paddle tail or a jerkbait style.
And we've got a big selection of Z-Man because this is their first year at the tent sale. They'll be behind the store on, in the Edgewater parking lot. But go up, talk to the guys. They're going to have a casting tank there. They can show you how to work. It's a 2-foot by 8-foot tent, so they are tank. And that way that you can get an idea of what you're supposed to do with these. I would say the one that I've used, the one I like, is the Scented Paddler Z. And that Scented Paddler won Carl's fishing a lot.
Right.
And he was really doing great on the snook back in the flats, rigging them with a worm hook or a jig head, and depending upon how you wanted it to fall. Right. With a worm hook, the whole thing kind of lays down more flat. When you put a jig head in it, you can get that more hopping action out of it, like, you know, where it's darting up and then falling head first. So that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it'll be a neat one to see them. And I want to talk to them about rigging them up because I honestly have a little bit of a tricky time sometimes with different style of jig heads.
Hopefully we have their jig heads now. And hopefully the worm hooks will be here by the time they get here tomorrow night to start setting up. I guess their stuff actually works good with their stuff. It's designed for it. So.
Absolutely.
But one of the problems is trying to mix and match other stuff with it. It's very, very difficult.
Well, and, you know, there's another one here that you got new that's coming that's going to be out there by the Mustad people that I think we should mention because it is going into summertime and afternoon rainstorms are going to
occur. Frog Togs.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Frog Togs much. It's the raincoat I've used for years,
right.
And I have my Frog Tog with me in the morning when I leave on the boat. Because it's cold, but the wind won't go through it. It weighs nothing. They're lightweight, but it's a windbreaker for me.
Right.
And then it doubles up as a raincoat, but it's a very light jacket that I can fold up very, very small. And I use that in the morning going out in the boat because it's so ungodly cold out. I mean, you figure, okay, the air temp's 60. Then add 25-mile-an-hour wind, 100% humidity, you know, 5 feet off the water, 4 feet off the water, that drops it down to 40 degrees right there.
Right.
It's cold.
And it's not just that jacket that they've come out with. I mean, just in the recent time, they've come out with a thinner, lightweight, actual rain jacket.
Yeah, Carl's got them ordered.
They've got
Josh
some heavy-duty bibs and the new industrial-type ones. So they've really broadened out the market a lot. So you're going to get to see a couple of the new things that they've been starting to advertise pretty heavily in some of the magazines that are just becoming available. Those are going to be at the show for probably the first time for the general public to see in a while.
Frog Talk guys, and these are guys from the factory. We've been talking about a lot of the winners, like Frog Talk's got all this cool new stuff. Let's talk about a loser for a minute. And this is going to be Yozuri's first time at the show. But I love some of their baits, the Crystal Minnows, 3D Fingerlings, their Poppers and the Walkers and all that. But one bait that I had such high hopes for from Yozuri, and I'm not giving up on it yet, but I got to tell you, it's not what I really thought I could just take it out, throw it, catch a lot of fish, and that's this knuckle bait. It's a spinner bait with a round ball on it, and I bought a bunch of them because I thought, wow, something different.
You were trying to relive the 70s with the disco ball thing, I think is what it was.
Yeah, well, it could be. I think it would have done better if they would have made it like a disco ball with a whole bunch of little mirrors on it.
Might be, actually.
Or a bright chrome silver, but it's got like a marble in place of the willow blades or Colorado blades on top of it, and a regular spinnerbait on the bottom, but it's got that round ball on the top.
Yeah.
I threw it at the reef when the Cobia were around and then looked at it. I've tossed it around. A couple of guys in the bass things have bought some, but I haven't heard any good reports back on it.
No, I was so hopeful.
You ever get that, RJ, where you sit there and you're looking at something going, wow, that's so
what
cool.
A great idea. Yeah.
And nothing. I mean, so email me, frank@fishandfranks.com, if you've caught a fish on that Yozuri knuckle bait, because I really thought this was going to be cool. And I'm telling you what, going from hero to zero on this one. Now, the Yozuri's got a lot of good lures on it. But
right.
I just thought this was funny because I looked at it. I really wanted it to catch fish.
Well, and we also got to give Yozuri kind of an honorable little salute here is that this year they finally lowered their prices back down. Because a lot of people did get turned off by that.
Yeah.
And they're coming back down a little bit, so it's making it a little bit nicer.
Well, I know he's got some. He's bringing a whole bunch of stuff to do specials with at the tent sale.
Cool.
And I've talked to him a lot. He's a really super nice guy. So I think that's going to be. I think he's going to become a big deal. First year is always iffy for anybody at the tent sale.
Right.
But over the next 2-3 years, if I get dumb enough to keep doing this.
Depends on if we live through this one without having a heart attack.
Yeah,
first.
If I live through this one, I mean, I just. So anyway, one of the things I want to get to is we talked about all the mirror lure new baits. Jim from Rapala is going to be there. He's been there for 11 years, always in the same spot, right outside the front door to the left. And the Ripstop and the Twitchin' Mullet. Now let's give a loser shout out to some
names chosen that don't make sense.
Oh my God! Some idiot in Minnesota looked at this thing, which looks just like a greenback. I mean, it's one of the best looking greenback lures I've ever seen, and called it a twitching mullet.
Yeah.
I mean, loser! Pick up a book. What do you don't have? Google mullet. Type it in. Look at the images. I mean, for God's sakes, I think the guy in Minnesota, he works for Rapala. He ought to have a computer and a little thing called Google.
You would think.
I mean, what kind of a mental, well, I'm not going to say midget, but that would be politically incorrect. But
he did look up mullet, and it showed a picture of Joe Dirt, and he said, wow, that looks just like me. I'm going to name this lure after myself.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. The Twitchin' Mullet was named because the guy looked like Joe Dirt. He had a mullet.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to just roll with that one.
All right. I'm gonna let you have it. Duck Gear phone boxes. Now, Duck Gear makes these bags. They're coming to the tent sale. And you drop your phone in them, and you can use them inside of the waterproof pouch. I think it would be nice if you get one bigger than your phone so you can put your fishing license and the other stuff in it. It's got a little strap. I hang them over my steering wheel so I know where it is. But I feel bad for Duck Gear because they're making more and more waterproof phones.
Yes.
So I think this guy's got a limited shelf life.
Well, you know, they haven't come up with a waterproof phone that floats yet.
And
one of the nice things about the bags, and I've had this experience, you know, I put it in a bag, it was on an arm strap kind of thing, and, you know, in the activity of fishing, it came off and it hit the water, and it floated. Bent over, picked it up, and away I went. Now, otherwise, that would have been down, you know, 8-10 feet. I would have had to go home and get the tanks and see if I can find it.
I don't know if any of them are waterproof down to 10 feet.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think a foot, 2 foot or something like that, they're fairly waterproof. Because I've had phones ruined. It fell out of my pocket, my LiveWell. I had a quarter inch of water in the LiveWell. Zzz, gone. So, anyway, as far as other fish going out there, we've talked about the cobia, a lot by the artificial reef, east side of the harbor, west side of the harbor, outside the sandbars. Snook along the ICW, whether you're in Venice, all the way down to Sanibel, along the ICW, the snook seem to be going deep at night and then coming up into the shallows during the day. They went out prematurely before this cold, and they're kind of, I wouldn't say stuck out there, but they need that deep water at night to survive the cooler temperatures.
Yeah. It's kind of going a weird holding pattern.
Excuse me. And then they're going up onto the shallow once the sun's beating on the water. Like Robert said, afternoon's the time to go after them. Now, bonnet sharks are still out there wrecking stuff. We were kind of forgetting about the bonnets with the weather change and stuff, and then throwing that rage craw from Strike King kind of brought bonnets back into the forefront because they're up in Lemon Bay, they're down in Sanibel by the Causeway, they're up in Charlotte Harbor again. This cooler weather's got bonnets all over the place. Best live bait for them or dead bait is always shrimp for the bonnet sharks. They prefer that over everything. A black tip, rather have a Spanish sardine or a thread fin, but bonnet sharks, they're all about shrimp. And that crawdad has just gone crazy on those bonnet sharks. I was really surprised about that. Now, trout fishing, any good news on trout, Robert?
Honestly, Pine Island is the only place I've been hearing good, consistent quality numbers about. They are still around on the east side a little bit and down in the Sound, even Bull and Turtle Bay. But there's been those little tiny super weak patches of red tide still coming in through Gasparilla and Lemon Bay. It's not creating any major fish kills, but it's getting some of those fish to move around or be a little lethargic, so the bigger trout really haven't been cooperating there the way they were a couple weeks ago. But Pine Island Sound definitely has had some very good fish, and even here in this past 2 days, I've had a couple reports from North Matlache heading up towards Two Pines area with some pretty good trout.
Alright, so, trout fishing, kind of on the if, but it could just break loose again. We should be losing all our trout this time of year. We should be just have a few straggler big ones.
All right.
But for some reason or other, with the odd weather and everything, the way everything's been going, we've got fairly good numbers of trout. They're just not cooperating good. But keep your eye out this week as the weather should stabilize a little bit, we hope. Once that weather stabilizes, watch the outside of the sandbars, especially, excuse me, around Jug Creek, Boquilla. No, it wasn't moonshine. That was Mountain Dew. All right. just giving you an idea. Boomerang Tools, the number one line cutter, leader cutter thing, will be at the tent sale. He's got a special deal on him. He's got a couple hundred there he's going to try and blow out. So check that out.
And then WKDW is going to be there also.
You got to come down and meet RJ. Robert and I will be there. Look for me. I'm the guy running around 200 miles an hour with my hair on fire all day. But RJ will be in his booth. He's going to be doing interviews with people. Come up, say hi to him. Robert's going to be there.
I'll be running the opposite direction of you with my head on fire, too.
Right. So you can tell if you need Robert to hold still, just hold the beard. He doesn't go far when you do that.
I could say something about you to stop you cold in your tracks, but I'm not going to go there because this is kind of a G.
No, it's a family station,
right,
yeah.
Family
yeah.
station, all right. Yeah, we'll stop with that. All kinds of cool stuff to do and see. Forget about the sale thing. Just come down and meet, shake hands, get some pictures with some of these folks. You're going to have a blast. Fish and Frank, Robert, RJ, thanks for listening, guys.
The wife, she thinks I'm working. And the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer.